Children and finances. Finances is a hot topic today for all of us. How do we help our children negotiate the financial scene? What do we say to them? How do we make them feel comfortable and secure when we ourselves may be trembling? Of course, we have to take into consideration the age of the child that we're talking to. Children who are under 5 years old really don't even understand numbers, let alone money and the implications of money. So I don't think that much has to be said to small children. If it turns out that the parents are having financial issues that require them to make life changes, like selling something that the children love, or moving to another home, or downsizing in any significant way that a child under five can identify, and the child asks, why do we have to move to a smaller house? Or, why do we only have one car now instead of two? Or why can't we have as much, such and such food as we used to have, things like that. If the child actually can notice and asks a question, the parents can give vague answers to children that age. I don't really think we have to start talking about the cost of things in detail. We can just say, well, this is what mommy and daddy decided is the best thing for now. Or the grown-ups are making decisions for us that, in this family, that are the best decisions that we can make. If the child protests, but I like that piece of furniture, or I like this thing, whatever is missing now, the parents can say, yes, we liked it too, but there are reasons why we have to change things right now or do things differently, and we're taking care of you the best we can and making the best choices we can, and that's all that you need to know right now. If the parents are also sad, let's say, selling a home that everybody is enjoying living in can make everybody in the family unhappy. It's fine for the parents to share the fact that they're also feeling disappointed, but to say things, again, in a vague way to children that age, to say things like, well, it's not really what we want either. We're also feeling sad about it, but this is what we have to do right now. If the child persists, some kids are pretty clever, even though they don't understand numbers, but why, mommy, why do we have to do it right now? The parents can certainly say, well, this has to do with changes that you are too little to understand. I mean, what are we going to say to a child? Changes in the economy. I really don't think a five-year-old needs to have that information. Again, a five-year-old is really looking to parents to lead the way and to make things safe. And I think it's reasonable to say to children of that age, you're really too little to understand what's behind this. You just need to trust us that we're doing the best that we can. So, that would be for the very, very young sect, right? Now, when a child can actually understand that two and two makes four, and that things cost money, and that you have to have the amount of money to match the cost of the things, then we can have a more detailed conversation with the child about lifestyle changes that we might be making. So if we're not going to, camp this summer, we're not going to take that vacation that we were thinking of or whatever, and the child between 6 years old and, 12 years old, whatever, or 10 years old is asking why, then I think we can now begin to say, well, things have changed in the economy. I think we can now introduce the word economy to say that, there's a situation where the parents have jobs and the salaries, that maybe were supposed to go up are not going up, or the salaries are actually dropping, and still the cost of things are the same as before, or the cost is rising. We can have small discussions like this with children. And therefore, our money isn't going as far as it used to, so this year we're going to cut back and do something different. So the answer to the question becomes more detailed. It's really an arithmetic question. Now, information itself like that can actually be calming, just to know the facts, why. Like, the problem with the under five set is simply that they don't understand what the words mean and the numbers mean and so on, and that's why we can't explain it to them. But when a child is old enough to have the number concept that that things cost a certain amount of money and that we don't have as much money as we want for those things, then we can just tell them the facts. We don't have enough money right now. We'll have to wait. Perhaps we'll be able to do this later, or another time, another year, or whatever it is, but it won't be right now. The children who are actually teenagers can, you know, be encouraged to read up, you know, to go on the internet, to read, you know, Time magazine or whatever is the newspapers, whatever it is, and to actually learn about the marketplace and the economy so that they have a better understanding of how their own lives are being impacted. And I think it's reasonable to answer all of their questions in a fair amount of detail, explaining even if something has happened, like mommy or daddy has lost a job and the child, I don't think, you know, a teenager needs to be sheltered from that. It's a question for children who are, let's say, under 12 years old, whether they need to know the details of job changes and so on. Losing a job or being temporarily out of work, if it's going to be, you know, obvious to a child because the parent is now at home or something, of course, needs to be commented on, even if the child's only 7 years old. Mommy or daddy is in between jobs or is changing what they're doing right now. They'll be home for a while. But the older child can have a more realistic answer based on as much information as the parents actually have. In terms of scaring children, you know, like how children will take this kind of information depends on their natures. As always, some kids, nothing in the world bothers them. They're calm, let's say, by nature, whereas the more anxious or sensitive child who has a vivid imagination and an active mind might be conjuring up all sorts of scary scenarios, like, well, does this mean we won't be able to do this, we won't have that, and terrible things will happen, you know. So the job of the parents here is to provide not only facts and figures, but to provide a model of how one handles life challenges in general, and specifically here financial challenges, and how one thinks about these challenges. And in fact, there are specifically Jewish ways to think about all of life's challenges, so we want to use this opportunity to help children work it through. Life in general was never meant to be just one smooth little ride where everything goes exactly the way we want it, though we love it that way. You might have noticed already that life just isn't that way. And children learn this at a very young state. You know, even when they have a sibling they don't want, they realize life is not exactly the way they wanted it. And we're always saying no to kids, even if it's not for financial reasons. We say, no, you can't have this toy. No, you can't have this sugar cereal. And they understand the concept of no. And if we're just saying no to more things right now, or a different category of things because of the cost, because of our own lifestyle changes, the general idea of no should not be unfamiliar to any child. If it is, we've really got some sort of problem going on there. So now let's look at the emotional side of coping with the no and the fact that maybe there are some things that we're not going to be able to do this year or right now. And I say this year and right now because who really knows, you know, what's going to happen in the future? The parents' own style of handling uncertainty is going to impact, of course. So we need to examine our own thinking process on this. Maybe it's the adults who are scared, negativistic, worried, losing sleep, thinking up the worst-case scenarios, falling to pieces, right? If that's what we're doing, we will definitely be scaring our kids. So if it's possible for us to take care of our own mental state any which way we can, whether that means some professional counseling, some support from other people, reading, going online, you know, depending on the cost of services that support us, right? Because, you know, we may need everything from, you know, mental health services to naturopathic services for relief of stress or medical services or all kinds of things to help us do better ourselves. Because like our kids, we all have different natures. So some of us are, you know, okay, this is a little setback and things will be fine in a few months or 6 months or a year or 5 years. And whenever they're going to be fine, I'm going to be fine. And, you know, like some of us are just cool. And others of us are the worrying type, and we don't handle stress very well. No matter how we handle stress, though, we usually want the very best for our kids, and we want them to do, sometimes we want them to do better than we're doing with a particular stress. So either we're going to have to be very good actors and actresses, or we're going to actually have to take care of our stress, which is probably the advisable thing. So, you know, look inside ourselves. That's what we need to do, and see what are we thinking. Now, we're probably having similar feelings to our children's feelings when we have to say no to ourselves and no to them. There are normal feelings of fear, of worry, of disappointment, of anger, and of helplessness that we might feel and they might feel. Now, what we want to do when they express those feelings is accept them and acknowledge them using techniques like emotional coaching, that is, naming the child's feelings and just acknowledging them, saying, well, you know, let's say the child says, but I want to go to camp, or I wanted to go to that best camp. Maybe the kid is still going to camp, but not the most expensive one, or, you know, just a different, maybe it's not going to be sleepover camp, maybe it's going to be day camp, or maybe, you know, I'm just using camp, but, you know, fill in the blanks for whatever makes sense to you in terms of what might have to be changing. And the child is frustrated. Well, that's pretty normal. So, you know, we don't want to say to a child, well, just, you know, shape up and, you know, change your attitude, because, you know, we're going to have to tighten our belts around here and we're all doing it and I don't want to hear you whine and complain. You know, even though we might not want to hear them whine and complain, I think we should expect them to be a little bit unhappy about changes that are not appealing, just like we're unhappy about it. You know, I wanted that fancy vacation and now I'm, you know, going downtown to a restaurant and calling it, you know, a holiday. If you have to say no to yourself or your child, frustration, disappointment is normal. So when the child expresses that, we should welcome it with just acknowledgement, naming the feeling, and letting it be. So the parent can say things like, yes, I know it is disappointing. Yes, it is frustrating. Now, some parents are actually devastated, heartbroken, to be causing their children pain and frustration. And I would urge any of you who feel that way to remember that a little bit of suffering is actually good for the development of a human being. That a child who can deal with a little bit of crisis usually packs that crisis into his subconscious mind, where it tends to serve him well throughout his life. A lot of people have become who they are as adults, specifically because there was some frustration that they had to deal with as a child, and they wanted to make the world a better place or make their lives a better life, specifically because of that frustration. Frustration and difficulty do not harm children in their development. If anything, it actually helps children. So, like, you know, before you start falling to pieces thinking, oh, I'm ruining my child's life because I have to say no, you know, this year because, you know, we just can't afford A, B, or C, please rest assured that you're not ruining your child's life. Even if your child says to you that you're ruining his or her life, that is not what's happening at all. You know, it's, in fact, you're not doing anything. If it was up to us, you know, we'd give our kids everything, the moon, the star, the sun, you know, we love them. But the point is, it's actually not up to us. You know, we're not running the world. And, you know, a force much larger than us has determined that it's going to be no this year and that we all have to deal with it. So, in fact, sharing that idea with children is important, to let them know that it's okay, you understand that they're frustrated, and that you yourself feel sad that, you know, that they can't have what they want this year, but it's not your idea to deprive them, and you wouldn't have deprived them. It's the way God is running the world, and that there is something that we don't understand, but it's all part of a larger process. Now, we'll say more about this soon, because we don't want to also cast God into the one who's the depriving, punitive, you know, bad character. So we'll talk a little bit more about this in a minute. But right now, we're just saying acknowledge the child's feelings and acknowledge your own feelings. And keep in mind that during times of financial difficulty, children and adults actually also develop a lot of creativity. You know, they can do things to start little businesses and make money that they never would have thought of. I'm talking about children now and teenagers that can become entrepreneurial, that can become creative, that can invent things just to play with or do, not just to make businesses, but just different ways of spending their time and their energies that come specifically because they don't have the money for this or that toy or this or that activity. So there's a lot of creativity that can happen when people just don't have all the material things that they want. And keep that in mind. Don't lecture children with that. Don't say, well, now you'll just have to use your head. You know, like, that's not the way to do it. But think to yourself, keep in mind that necessity, you know, can breed creativity and actually all kinds of new opportunities, and that it's not all bad when we have to say no. It can actually be a hidden good, and many people will talk about that. There's a bunch of books that are really worthwhile on people's lives, inventors, business people, the story of how many things were invented, come out of hard times, deprivation, something missing, something lacking. And if you go to your local children's library and speak to the librarian about getting together a few of those books for you, you know, you may find, and just leave them around the house so that your children can read about other people who have made good out of hard times, and just let them be inspired by that. So let us look for a moment at the spiritual side of financial difficulties. Some of the messages that we want our children to have and to understand. And, of course, here again, we want ourselves to believe this and understand this so that we can sincerely give it over to our children. So I'm going to give just a little crash course on some spiritual concepts that might be relevant here, but you know, we may want to follow those up with more in-depth study and work on ourselves to integrate the awareness of the spiritual issues behind money. So the first one is that Hashem runs the world. It's God who decides whether there will be a flow of financial wealth or there will be difficult times. And that everything that God does is for a good, although sometimes it's for a hidden good. But, you know, instead of saying, well, you know, it's our fault that we're not doing well financially, which, you know, people, you know, even when the financial times are good, in general, so that more people are being successful, the individual financial journey of a person is very much determined by Hashem, so that there are people who are very clever, very creative, very brilliant and competent, but they make no money. And there are people who are, you know, they're just nothing special about them really, but they're fabulously wealthy. And that's because it's not our own brains or our own gifts that determine whether or not we're going to have money, but it's because that our path, our spiritual path in life, either requires money or requires less money or a lack of money even. So that path in life is determined by God. And we will, you know, no matter how hard we work or how, just as long as we do the minimum necessary, we have to do something. Okay, if you don't plant your wheat, then the wheat can't grow. But if you plant it and Hashem wants it to grow, it's going to grow. Okay, and if Hashem does not want it to grow, then it won't grow. That's sort of the idea behind that. And if we live in a time where there was wealth and then there's less wealth or something, that's because that's what Hashem wants for us, so that we have an opportunity to learn things about a new side of life. And Hashem is in our lives and understands us and helps us. When we have any difficulty, our job is to turn to Hashem and ask Him for that help. even though Hashem knows that we're waiting, it's important for us to open our mouths and to ask Hashem for help. And this is something that we can teach our children carefully, because when children pray to Hashem and don't get an immediate answer, they say things to us like, well, I asked Hashem, I said, please, I really want this item or that item, I really, really want it, and still I didn't get it. So you see, Hashem doesn't listen to me, or Hashem is powerless, or there is no Hashem. You know, that's the kind of experience that children often have. So when we're teaching them to pray, we're going to say, when you pray, your prayer goes into a container, and Hashem either stores it for future use in your life, or in the lives of the Jewish people, or the lives of the world, or uses it right away to answer your prayer for what you were asking for. So sometimes, in other words, no prayer goes wasted or unheard or unanswered. That's not a Jewish concept. The concept is that every prayer is used for good, and some are used to be answered yes right away, and some will be used to contribute to something later. For example, saving you from a car crash that, you know, you could have been killed in, but the car got totaled and you were saved. Or contributing to saving the Jewish people in times of anti-Semitism or crisis. So, you know, we want to let the children know that Hashem listens to every single word and cares about it. And that sometimes we have to pray over and over and over and over again, because there's a certain number of prayers that Hashem wants to hear before he's going to say yes, and that a person should never stop praying. One of the benefits of teaching children that they can talk to God about what they want is that it removes some of the helplessness and some of the powerlessness that a person feels. As long, again, as you caution children not to expect that you pray today and God says yes tomorrow sort of thing. It doesn't work like that. But that God is listening and watching, and the prayer itself is very precious. God also does things only for our good. And we may not understand why it's good for us not to have that new item that we wanted, or the new boots that we wanted this year, or you know, the opportunity that we thought we were going to have. We don't get why it's not good. But we're going to develop a sort of trust that Hashem knows that it's in our best interest right now not to have it, that something good is coming out of our ability to live without that thing that we wanted, even though it hurts. It's always important to acknowledge the child's feelings. We want it. We're mad. We can even be mad at Hashem for not giving it to us. That's also normal. We're frustrated. We're, again, you know, disappointed. We can have all those feelings. Those are feelings in our heart. At the same time, our head can understand that it's somehow good. So there's a split between our heart and our head. Whereas something feels bad, we can know that it's good. And that's what we're trying to accomplish here. Bad things are actually hidden good. We can't, you know, always see it right now. Sometimes we're fortunate enough to see it in our lifetime, you know, maybe a little bit later, a few months later, a few years later, or many years later. And sometimes we don't see it while we're in this world. So all of this is about building our emuna, our faith, that there is a bigger picture, one that we cannot see. When we tell children that it's God who's running the world, and that things do make sense, and that one day we will see how they make sense, even if we can't see it now, this can help remove the sense of meaninglessness to the suffering that a person's going through. I mean, there's suffering which is painful by itself, but believing that it's all for nothing, or it's completely random, you know, it just adds to the pain. Whereas if a person has a larger picture, now, it can really help. And to get that larger picture, there's the history of our people. Okay, we need to look at the long history, not any one point in the moment. You know, we don't want to look at any one pogrom or any one, you know, devastating period of history for Jewish people. But we need to look at the entire picture, that we're still here as a nation, and that God is supervising us, has been supervising us, will supervise us right to the end of time. And the book of Psalms, the book of Tehillim, where the story and the struggles of King David are put as David HaMelech pours out his heart to Hashem in prayer and often in thanksgiving for being saved and for being helped and for being guided along his journey, even though the journey was very, very difficult. It's really, in the book of Tehillim, a book that builds our faith that even though we can't see it, Hashem is with us during all kinds of struggles. And there's an art scroll, Children's Tehillim, that might be a nice thing to introduce children to right now during these times. Just, it's a beautiful picture book full of prayers that that children can be introduced to so that they can use this as a resource themselves. Now, I don't know, like not everybody's going through desperate or, you know, very, very difficult times. Some people are not going to be hardly touched by, you know, the financial changes in the world, whereas other people will be deeply touched by them. But the whole idea that there's a larger picture and this is part of a larger journey, I think, can be helpful. So, also, anything that a child can do to take action. What are we supposed to do? What does Judaism say we're supposed to do when there is a crisis of any kind? It says, you know, we're supposed to pray more, daven more, learn more. Learn more about Judaism, learn more about Torah. Improve ourselves, do teshuvah, that is, you know, pick a character trait and work on ourselves. Become less angry, more patient, more loving. You know, if you're saying, if you are praying, pray more carefully, you know, use a sitter, articulate the words better. It's, you know, any little thing that we can do. So when we teach our children, yes, we are going through financially difficult times, but when people go through difficult times, here's what Hashem wants us to do. Hashem wants us to improve ourselves, to talk to Him directly, and to learn more about His ways so that we have a deeper understanding and deeper connection to the big picture in life. And that is always the Jewish response to difficulty, whether it's personal difficulty like illness, personal illness or family member illness, or national difficulty like terrorism, war, and so on. So now, in addition to that, we can also do other kinds of problem-solving activities when we have financial crisis. For example, we may help the children come up with of ways to increase their personal income or ways to decrease their expenses and show them that we're doing that kind of thing too, that we don't just sit back and wring our hands and cry, but we actually do some problem-solving and we look optimistically to the future. If a child is unduly distressed by the changes in his or her life, then, you know, it could be useful to take the child to a mental health professional and to get some extra tools, strategies, or treatments that can reduce that suffering. Because even though there are these feelings that we've spoken about, negative emotions that accompany all kinds of stress, when they're mild, that's normal. When they're intense, then they need attention. They need more professional attention, and there can be relief. And that's, again, whether it's the child's feelings or our own feelings. And there are psychological treatments. There are naturopathic treatments that can be helpful. And there are medical treatments, if necessary, more for adolescents and adults, not so much for children. But still, there's so much that we can learn and do to reduce our stress. So that's one look at what we can do to how we can approach the financial issues of our times with our children.